You're listening to This Week in UX, Episode 3, for November 22nd, 2009. And welcome to This Week in UX. I'd like to thank all of our listeners, and I would like to welcome any new listeners to our podcast. Every episode of This Week in UX deals with user experience issues and news from around the world, and information that I feel is important to bring to any or all who are interested in user experience on the web, on the desktop, on anywhere else. So let's get started. Facebook has an interesting new policy that they are applying this week when it comes to the use of photos that you have posted on said social media site. The policy basically involves using your photos in advertising that they themselves sell and profit from. This is something that was actually poo-pooed by news reporters and Facebook earlier in the year, if you actually start to look back at the history. But what I've actually found by digging through some settings, thanks to my friend Lanny, is that there's now an option that you can actually disable ads on your Facebook wall that actually uses photos that you've posted on the site itself. Now, that brings up an interesting question, a question that I'm actually bringing up here. Who owns your content? Now, people can be apologists for Facebook and say, well, you've signed or agreed to their terms and conditions, so basically they own whatever you post through their site. Well, to me, I completely disagree because I've tested users in many different situations when it comes to terms and conditions. First off, nobody reads terms and conditions. I doubt anyone listening to this podcast has ever actually read the details of any terms and conditions that they actually agree to when it comes to installing new programs. And secondly, the idea of hiding behind terms and conditions to exploit content that users provide or fill in to a social media site, to me, is preposterous. I mean, I'm a full disclosure, open source kind of guy. So the idea that Facebook is actually using this type of, you should have read the terms and conditions excuse, is kind of bogus to me. So in my opinion, if you have not heard of this, you should be looking into and digging into any website's terms and conditions to find out what you are actually agreeing to when you actually decide to start using that site's services. So in the end of the day, we should own what we create. Whether that content is hosted by someone else or posted on their own web servers or not, I think that when it comes to the user experience side of this, we should have a best practice or advocacy as user experience professionals that you basically surface this type of information more than you need to, because whether it's to make money or not, the users need to know what they're agreeing to at all times whenever they actually use that company's services. Additional news, this time from a patent that came from a company that I actually respect quite a bit, and many user experience professionals do as well. That company is Apple. News broke the past few weeks that Apple had actually patented an operating system, or an idea behind an operating system, that made the user view ads before they could accomplish a task. Yes, you heard that right. Apple Computer, renowned in the UX community for providing an elegant experience and fantastic industrial design, has requested and filed for a patent that prevents users, and I'm incredulous as I even say this, from actually accomplishing something until they view an ad. Now, I've been involved in patent operations and applications before. I'm actually working on a couple of patents right now. But the idea that Apple would actually pursue such a notion, I hope that this is a situation where Apple had an idea and pursued a patent on said idea in order to maintain and keep their own intellectual property. If Apple ever actually applies such an idea to their products, I think that many, many users will promptly and very quickly abandon said product in order to find something that does not distract or annoy by providing ads. Now, that being said, if Apple is looking at providing a free or a nearly free operating system that is then advertising supported, that's a somewhat different story. But again, as with the Facebook story, you have to provide appropriate and very visible terms and conditions to the users to make them know that, guess what, you're signing up to be a basically guinea pig for ads. I think this is an area that Hulu does very well. They provide content, i.e. movies and television shows, for free, and the user has to see ads in order to see said content. That is the way you do these things. And ironically, that's actually the way that media was sponsored in the 1950s and 40s. Radio shows and television shows were advertising supported, and that content was interrupted by one advertiser. We, of course, have seen the future, which became now the past, where advertising became ubiquitous and plentiful. Now, if we're going to an ad model which is more of a single-payer ad model for content, such as Hulu, then that's a good thing in many ways, because the user accepts that, quote, terms and conditions before they actually get to view the content. If a user has to accept terms and conditions before they can actually, open a Word document or send an email, that might be a different experience altogether. So anyway, we live in interesting times, as the old Chinese philosopher once said, and this particular patent does seem to be something we need to pay attention to. Apple, I respect you, I love your products, but don't get cocky, as Han Solo once said. In other operating system news, Google just released Google Chromium, their operating system, which they are scheduled to put out in a formal way sometime next year. It's a kind of semi-public beta. You can actually download a disk image you can install using a virtual machine program such as VMware from gdgt.com. I'll have the link in the show notes. And all you have to do is basically open up the virtual machine once it's set up using your Google Gmail username and password. Initial impressions of the UI is, well, the first thing you see is the UI message saying UI under development, design is subject to change. The basic interaction metaphor that they're using is pretty much the same as the Google Chrome browser itself. Very tab-based, and instead of having a start button such as in Windows or a dock such as in OS X, you have a start page, which has basically different versions of the applications they service, Gmail, Hotmail, Yahoo Mail, but all web-based, browser-based, which is basically functionality from the cloud. So when it comes to the basic aesthetics of the design, it's really early, but what I really like is it tends to keep with the very simple aesthetics that you see when it comes to the rest of the Google suite of product offerings. Very streamlined, very simple controls, not a lot of complexity, and the options are appropriately placed. One thing I will have to say is there's two different kind of control mechanisms in the top corner, which are kind of weird. One is an options menu. The other one tells you whether you can turn on or off networking. And the third is just a basic power configuration control or readout. If you have a laptop. Of course, I'm running it as a virtual machine, so I do not have a laptop, so knowing how much power my computer has doesn't really help me. So into summing up this, it's a pretty interesting design. Not much to it, but I think that's the idea. Google decided to create a web-based, browser-based operating system, and that's pretty much what you get. And it has a couple of interesting add-ons, such as Facebook and Twitter options, a to-do list, options to go to Lala, Pandora, Hulu from that main hub page, as well as a chess game, which is actually kind of interesting. So just kind of getting my hands a little deep into this, if that makes any sense. I don't know if it does. But initial impressions are favorable. And as I said, you can download a copy of Google Chromium yourself, or Google Chrome, as many call it, through the link in the show notes. One quick note, I am a big fan of Intuit's TurboTax application, and the newest version, TurboTax 09, was released for download this past week. Pretty much the same UI that you see in every TurboTax product each year. Very simple, wizard-based UI, and they have added some kind of notes at the beginning of the welcome screen talking about the improvements they've made. And I think what I really like about it, having walked through it once again today, is that you actually have questions at the beginning of the experience saying, has any of these things changed? They ask if your marriage situation has changed. They ask if you have bought a home. And it then will either immediately redirect you to option screens in regards to your choices, or it basically makes sure that those optional screens exist throughout that wizard workflow as it walks you through your income and deductions. Again, pretty slick product, very refined. I don't know anybody who actually works at the Intuit UX department, but my compliments to that group. They've done a good job. Well, that is it for This Week in UX for this week. Very interesting week, as you may have heard. I hope to get some additional interviews in future shows, much like we did in that second show, and I hope you enjoyed that. I definitely did, having the chance to talk to three key UX talents in the Atlanta area. So that being said, I thank you for listening, and I look forward to talking to you next time.